Blog Talk Radio.
Unhinged. You were like some desperate howling demon. You frightened me. Do it again.
It's been a while, folks. It has been a while. But I am back. This is the first show for us of 2013. I'm not in my normal studio, and you probably hear the difference in the show right now. I'm in my portable studio in a cube, and there just went the heater, and I can hear everything coming through the vent. Anyway, I was going to broadcast out of Studio A tonight, and I'm, of course, Greenness. I have not introduced myself. Some of you don't even know me, maybe. My name's John Almada, and I am the host of Soulstream, and I've got my trusty friend here, Nancy Mum, is my co-host. Hello, Nancy.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
We're doing good. Hello. How are you all doing?
I am doing fabulous. I have my Flexeril. I have my Flexeril. I'm doing wonderful.
We have the pills. That's been a lot of the stuff going on. People are going through a lot of medical stuff, myself included, which explained my long absence. So I was starting to have troubles right after my dad's passing back in February of last year. And I kind of tried to put it off because I was dealing with his death and then my mother's operations. And then in about October, I started realizing I've got something really wrong going on, and I had no energy, and I was putting off shows. I didn't want to be around people. I mean, I was just, no energy at all. And it turned out when I went in and got checked, I had a hormonal problem. And they had to, they ran the test, and I had, I'm not going to be ashamed to admit it, I had low T. And so they ran two sets of tests, and in January I started my replacement therapy, and it has been one hell of a ride. The first week was hell on earth. I mean, I was going through all sorts of strange, wacky symptoms, and it's just gotten slowly better and better. But the last week and a half or so, I'm starting to feel much better, much more normal. My energy's back. I'm out working on the ranch. I'm getting things done. I'm just, you know, I've just got things to do and, you know, places to go. So I get to go through two more months with the type of treatment that I'm taking, and then they're going to use implants, and they go in my posterior, and that's going to be interesting. So, but I feel so much better right now. It's unbelievable. And my abilities kind of took a hiatus. I mean, I was having real trouble with readings, and I'm starting to get stirrings again with the ability to pick up on things. And we've been seeing a lot of spirits around the property. I'm starting to hear stuff again. And so it really hit me in all the areas, you know, and I didn't feel like I could do good shows in that condition. So I just pulled back. And so my apologies. But you, Miss Nancy, Flexeril. Now, what did you do? You did something with your leg, right?
I did something with my back.
Your back.
I don't know. A couple years ago, I was walking on campus, and I was walking through these great big iron gates. And on the other side of these big iron gates, there were these two little boys that looked like they were just about ready to duke it out. And so I was just picking up my pace, and I'm heading for them, you know, and I stepped on a half-eaten mango, skin side up, and my legs went to the left, and my upper body went to the right, and my face was just heading straight for this iron gate. So I didn't want to smash my orbital socket, so I turned, and I kind of took it on my shoulder, on my right shoulder. By doing so, I pulled all the muscles in my back. And I have to be careful and not do something stupid. Well, the other day I was lifting, it doesn't sound like much, like a case of like Kleenex. Doesn't sound like anything, but paper is heavy, and I was lifting it over my head and turning and putting it on a shelf, and then I just knew I shouldn't have done that again. So it's something I have to watch. It's something that pops up now and then, and when it does, then I take my Flexeril and I treat myself to doing nothing for a while, and then it goes away. So I am on my Flexeril, and I'm doing okay.
And I'm on my testosterone, and I feel like a man again.
And we all have our pills, so we feel better.
Actually, mine is actually, I shower, I get out, and I put it under my arm, and both arms, and my boss even pulled me aside after my review, which I got a great review at work, for best one in 4 years, and he pulls me aside and says, you're happier, you're doing better. I go, yeah, I should have done this a long time ago. And when my doctor, you know, when she got the results back, and I did the second test in December, and she pulls me aside and says, John, I have more testosterone than you. And she's this little petite 40-year-old foxy blonde, and I'm like, oh, this is not right. And so, you know, as much as I'd like to, you know, say that, you know, these abilities I've got, you know, that I've worked with for, you know, for a lifetime, are not dependent on biology. They are, you know, I mean, I am an instrument, just like, you know, any piece of electronic gear. I have a, you know, this ability through my body. And when that is out of kilter, things go south. So, I've been making changes and, you know, dealing with this. And so it's been a real eye-opener for me, and I found that I really missed mediumship. You know, I've missed all the things I used to do, and, you know, was really passionate about, and now that seems to all be coming back. So it's just been some changes, though. I mean, you can't go through a thing like this and not have changes. I've developed some other, you know, hobbies and things along the way. Debbie Wells, and I got to mention the lead-in song with the Johnny B. Goode was her husband, Mike Wells. He is a professional musician, and he did that bit just for our show. So that's actually a little piece they did for Soulstream.
And it's fantastic.
Oh man, it was, but it didn't sound so good here on my portable rig. So I'm gonna, when I get the studio hardwired, and that's gonna happen tomorrow. I'm putting in the line tomorrow morning. I'm gonna rerun the checks and make sure that all sounds good, you know, through that linkage. But we are going to be using more of that music. I was talking with Debbie today. She was up here on the ranch helping me clean up the ranch, and it was nice to have another pair of hands to help up here. I mean, this, you know, 7.2 acres with all of the things that have gone south for the last, you know, 5 years since, you know, Dad got sick. Having that help really is something. I mean, you know, she actually stood at the gate, and we had a deer. I went out and wrestled deer. We were getting them off out of the property. I've been repairing fences, and so it was a heck of a day. Yeah, his music is just. Yeah, Nancy says, Debbie, tell Mike we love his music. So he's going to be featured on the show much more. And I'll talk to Debbie, too, about getting some more of his music and featuring him. He's just an extremely gifted musician. And when I opened my mail, you know, actually it was on Facebook the other day, and she had sent the clip that he had done. And I'm like going, you did that for me? I mean, you actually did this? And it's like, wow. So he's going to be a regular on the show with his music. And Debbie, of course, is, you know, just near and dear. She's somebody I grew up with in school. And then, of course, you, my dear Miss Mom. You are my dear, dear co-host. You I love. So it's good to be back in the seat. And things are on the looking up. I mean, lots of strange things going on out there. The stuff with the economy, people are getting weirder. Strange things. Change things are afoot at the Circle K. So, you know, I'm not sure where to go next without everything. Tonight I'm not going to do readings, you know, but I will start. I'm going to kind of put my training wheels back on for next week and start readings then. And so I'll start advertising and getting back into it. I'm going to have to do some check readings with some actual people in person, which scares the hell out of me. So I'm going to be doing that. Oh, Debbie says her husband's a great kisser, too.
Yes.
Oh, wait a minute. He was a cute deer wrestler on his tractor. Oh. She had me all confused there. I went, wait a minute. I was on the tractor today. She kissed. No, you didn't kiss me. Anyway, she just embarrassed the hell out of me, Debbie. Anyway, let's see. Let's talk about some of the stuff going on. I mentioned the hobby that I got into. I am now flying. I am an actual pilot. I actually flew a remote control aircraft, which I purchased. I have a what's called a DJI Phantom quadcopter, and I've always had an interest in aerial photography. And I got this thing is actually semi-professional. This is something that you can shoot studio quality film with. And in, you know, high definition. And I assembled it and did my first flight this Saturday, or actually this Friday. And it was just amazing. I mean, that thing lifted right off, and it has a GPS hover lock, so it actually picks up the GPS satellites, and I can actually hover in one position and have it as just basically an elevated tripod, you know, so I can focus it on one particular target and walk out there and just leave it. I don't even have to hold the controls. So we're going to be using it in our paranormal investigations. New angle on this. We're going to be using it to get really nice wide and close-up shots and do panning and all kinds of interesting you know, abilities that we didn't have before. So GRI is going to be back in business. We're looking for a case. And let me see here. We've got, a couple of our team members are going to be, have been kind of bugging me to get off my keister and get back out there. So I'm looking at March. We'll probably do a case in March and get out there. I'm also going to be doing interviews with some of the other paranormal teams out there, and I've had one that I keep putting off that should be in the coming, I think at the second week of February, we're going to have them on, and I cannot, it's Scott Weiss and his guys I'm trying to think of the place that they're at. They're back east of me. I know that much. It's been so long, I forgot everything. Nancy, I forgot
what
my
New York
looks like.
New York or Pennsylvania or
Pennsylvania.
Like
Pennsylvania.
That.
Yeah, he's in okay. Pennsylvania. They're by some of the Civil War battlefields out that way, and they do some excellent work out there. So we're going to be doing that. I've had a lot of stuff. I mentioned I was hearing things again. So my, it's around the property. We've been having all sorts of activity again, and once I started hearing stuff here in the last 2 weeks, I thought, oh, thank God it's back. I thought I'd lost it forever, you know. And now that things are kind of kicking in, I'm looking at doing some of the shows again, where we kind of go into mediumship 1 week, and then we go into doing EVP on air, and we'll do a bunch of that. So I'm going to start check readings and doing trial runs with EVP and see if my control's on the other side, which they've been making their presence known. So they understood, too, that this was kind of going bad on me. And I got to admit something, too, that as far as I have registered for the past year or two, you know, my dad's death, I seem to get over it. And I really didn't. And as a medium, that was probably one of the hardest things because, I mean, I've been through the training. I did all the requisite things that you would do to, you know, deal with people that were, you know, that would come to you. And I had never lost anybody close to me. And when that happened, I had, you know, my concerns to deal with immediately, which were my mother, you know, and her immediate health, because it was in great danger after he passed. And so we went through right up to the point where I keeled over in October, November. She had just finished her fifth surgery in November. And so I had put kind of that all on hold. And when that all kind of, you know, we got to a safe spot and I took a look at where I was at, I keeled over. And I've come to realize that, that it really affected me a lot more than I thought it would. And I'm still dealing with that, and it's grief. I mean, you lost a parent, and so I'm finding my way through this, you know. And
John,
especially, yeah.
You know, I was told when my husband died, don't rush through things. It could take up to 5 years, and after a year, I thought I was just cruising like nobody's business.
Yeah.
I had somebody suggested for me to keep a journal, and I thought this was stupid. But then I started it. Every night before I went to sleep, I wrote an entry in my journal, even though my first entry was, okay, this is stupid, but I said I'd write in it, so here I am, I'm writing in it, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But at the end of the year, I looked in that, and I was amazed. I was amazed at where I was and where, how far I had come, and knowing I still had things to go through. There's just some things that defy time, and they aren't going to, you're not going to get through them until you get through them. It's just like you're not going to be able to walk till you crawl. And it's just a thing that happens because of the way we're built, the way we're put together. You can't avoid it. And so just taking your time and not pushing yourself to go through a whole bunch of things, it's the best thing you can do for yourself. Just take your time. Don't let anybody or anything rush you. Now, I know you had stuff going on with your mom and stuff, and that's okay. But believe you me, I did not realize I was a zombie for a year.
Yeah, that was.
But I was. It took me a whole year to smile.
Wow. I can understand that, though. I mean, that's how it was for me. I mean, I was just going, okay, what's next? Okay, what's the next thing? And it was just, I think it was really, it really hit me in November, right in the middle of all the personal things that were happening to me, when I looked up one day and I remembered, oh, this was the week that Dad went in, started his real decline. And then so every day...
It was just before the holidays, too, John.
Yeah, and it was like...
Yeah.
I remembered all of the... I'm remembering whole days a year ago, you know, and right now, like, this week, here we are, February 1st. He died on February 28th, and this week he was being moved into a rest home, and we were basically trying, agonizing on what to do, because he was too sick to come home, but he wasn't too sick to be in the hospital. He needed that in-between care, and so we were trying to figure out how to deal with it and deal with Medicare and all that, and so it was just a day-by-day thing, and you know, we've been talking about it, Mom and me, you know, with you know, all of this, and it's just, you know, I'll come in and she'll be staring at his urn, you know, and it's just like, oh my goodness. And we feel him around. He's still doing the little trick with coming up to the door and rattling the doorknob, and happens to me quite a bit, and to her an awful lot. I'll feel him around, you know. I mean, he's doing his best to work, you know, be there with us through this. But, man, I mean, I didn't realize what people were going through when they lost someone they love and were coming to a medium to get that comfort. And now it happened to me. And, whoa, you're right. I mean, it's a, it feels like crawling. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be, that's the word. It's like you're just, you're kind of in, I think it's more like crawling in molasses. You know, things are just starting, and I'm starting to feel like I'm breaking free of it a little bit. But I've heard talk that, you know, the second year is even harder, you know. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm just, I'm not going to let this get the best of me, because I know that his spirit is fine. I mean, I've had EVPs from him. I've seen him. I've felt him. But this is really hard.
But you know what? The fact is that no matter how much he's been around, I don't know if he can help the people that are here, because they still have to deal with their physical bodies and their whole physical beings, and our whole, it's part of our, you know, our minds are part of our total beings also, that to go through the grieving process. I think I don't know, I could be wrong. On the other side, I think it's a little different for them. And I think it's very frustrating for them, too, to watch us kind of try to, like we're walking through quicksand, trying to get through this process, because they're over there, they're better, they're, you know, they don't have pain. But I think that their thinking or something is just a little bit different, because they're on a different plane than we are here. And you have to take care of yourself. You just have to let everybody else go to hell and take care of yourself. And if they don't like it, that's too bad, because you're the only one that's responsible for your life. And if you are going to be of help to anybody else, like with your mom or anybody else, like me with my daughter, she was only 6, excuse me. I just had the best way I could tell her about grief and how to get through the loss of a loved one is by being there for her and showing her by what I do.
Yeah.
And so you think about that too. You know, you've got to take care of yourself, and that's what I think people expect that. And you with your radio persona, I know you're just a very giving person, and it's hard to pull back from that. But I think that nobody could ever fault you for it. I think it's expected, you know.
Yeah.
And so here I am. I'm verbally shaking my finger at you, John.
Well, I
Ben,
I'm
take care
up.
Of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I finally realized I have to take care of this. I mean, and it just got to the point of undeniable. I mean, I knew I was dealing with grief at some point throughout the year, but when it got to the point where my energy levels were so it started in late September, it really took a turn for the worse. And by middle of October, I was like, I just was getting through the day, and it was everything I could do to move. And I felt like an old man. I mean, it was something. And what was really interesting was this week at work, one of my coworkers walks in and says, "You look younger." And I go, "Yeah, I feel younger." And he goes, "No, it's your face. You were walking like an old man." And I go, "Really?" And he goes, "Now you're like all over the place. There's no stopping you." And I go, "Yeah." And I told him a little bit about what I'd been through. And he goes, "Yeah, that's it." He goes, "You know, I've seen other people that have gone, you know, other men that have gone through this. And wow, you know, so I mean, I am feeling 100% better. It's, I'm told that even though I'm feeling good now, my doctor said that I would be feeling even way better by another 2 months. And then I got to go through a small adjustment period when they do the implant. And that's like a 5 month, 4 to 5 months lifetime. They put it in the butt cheek, and I've got a sore butt for a while, but I ain't going back. I don't care what it costs. I'm going to be paying for this because it's like $300 a month for this, but it's worth every penny. I mean, compared to where I was at. So I am I'm back in the game, and it's worth it to feel like this again. I feel like I did probably 20 years ago. You know, I've got that level of energy, and you know, it's Debbie can vouch for that because I towed her on my tractor because I had her in my little trailer rig that I have hooked up to the tractor. So she was hopping in, and we were going all over the place on the ranch. I was showing her around, and then I towed one of the other broken tractors we had. We were setting up a new boneyard for all the junk. So I was, you know, I just I went out there and kicked butt today, you know, and it was really hard because I, up until right now, I did not want to touch my dad's stuff, you know, and it was like his order and his way of doing things. And I finally turned that corner where it's like I'm taking over, you know, I'm dealing with the engineering stuff. I'm dealing with the real decisions about where to put things and how to reorder the ranch. And so, you know, the buildings really need a lot of care and feeding, and we're going to be, you know, reorganizing all of that. And I just see good things, you know. But and I'm going to be doing shows too, a little more from the road. I've been thinking about future things too. In April or May, we're going to do we'll do a show from Bodega Bay, and I'm taking my mother out there to let her just sit at the ocean. She just wants to go to the ocean, put her toes in the sand, and she just needs to go off and think. And it's been hard on her, and I'm going to go out there, and I'll take my, you know, my little quadcopter and my fishing gear and my metal detectors, and who knows, we'll even hunt for a ghost or two while we're there, but I'll do a show from there. So I'm going to take you along with me more, you know, in my day-to-day life stuff too, not just mediumship. And so it's been kind of finding your new walking shoes, you know.
Yep.
And yeah. Oh, I mean, it's
at the new you.
It feels so different to be feeling good again. Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. It's I don't know. It's funny. I'll wake up in the morning and I'll lay there and I'll go, I've got energy. What can I do today? And I just go in there and just get at it. And Mom's been looking at me like, whoa, what got into you? You know. And she's just laughing because, I mean, I went out and I got the quadcopter, and now I'm like, you know, I'm flying. You know, I can't wait for tomorrow because I'm doing my first flight with the with my GoPro camera. So I posted some stuff out on my channel on YouTube. If you just go to YouTube/ J Almada, J-A-L-M-A-D-A, you'll see the videos I did for my first flight and the assembly. And then we're going to be doing a lot more stuff with that. So I'm going to take up the first camera and actually do some stuff where you get the aerial view And I'm going to do some stuff called first person video, where we're going to be, I actually have goggles on. It'll look really cool. I can actually, I'll have a television transmitter on the quadcopter, and I can actually see from the quadcopter's view. So I'm actually a pilot at that point. I'm a real live pilot. And this thing can go up to 1,000 feet. So, but I have to stay below 400 feet and below to stay out of the national airspace, because if you go up above 500 feet and above, you're in FAA airspace, and that's controlled airspace. So it can come give you a big fine. So I'm going to say, you know, probably 1 to 200 feet. You know, I just shoot beautiful things and buildings and things like that. That's kind of what I'm going to be into. But, oh, my God, look at the chat room. The chat room is
People are piling
crazy.
In.
Oh, my goodness. I got callers. I got a caller just listening in. Let's see. I don't see the hand up, so hello to you. I think, how about you read it off? It's been a while since you did. I'm going to give you co-host duties now.
Okay.
All right.
Well, and we've got, of course, we've got John, and we've got Castle 407, Chris at Curious Times, Debbie Wells, Donald Black Fox, Doc Severus, One, Gabriel, guest 9160, Kimberly, me, Rebecca Bryson, Vika Dan, and Vicky Lady. Hello.
All right. Yeah, it's just good to see you all. You know, for those of you who just joined us, this is my first show of 2013. I've been off the air due to health concerns, and I feel a lot better now. I'll just give the short synopsis. You know, basically, John had low T. It got treated. We thought I was having heart trouble, and after they did some tests, and I went through 2 months of you know, specialized testing. In January, I started my therapy, and for a week, I was like Jack Nicholson. Here's Johnny, and then I started feeling better, and so I'm here. I'm back. And we're going to do a mediumship next week. I'm going to be back doing that. So this is kind of a by the seat of my pants thing. We've been cleaning up the ranch. Studio A, I was going to try to hook it up today, but I had Debbie with me, and we were cleaning up other things, and I couldn't get the line back in. We had a problem mid-autumn. We had a problem with our sewer. It went bad, and it turned out my father had not done it right, and so we $5,000 later we had a new sewer. But it also meant Studio A's network line had to be ripped out, and I had a mud field going into Studio A, and that was also another reason I didn't get out there to do much, because it was just all torn apart. And so that's all settled down, and we've got that pretty well all, you know, we've brought leaves in and covered up all the mud, and now I can actually walk out there and get to my studio. And so things are coming back online, you know, and, you know, it's just good to be back in the seat, though. I mean, I'm not in my normal studio. I've got my little portable Studio C here. I've got a Blue Yeti mic in front of me, a USB mic in my laptop. So anyway, but it's good to see. Oh, Chris is here. Chris, you want me to do your show, but I have no date. What date do you want me?
She stepped out for a minute. She's eating.
She's eating food? Oh,
yes.
AFK.
That's a good idea.
Need food. Must have food. Yeah, okay. So we'll just ask her. We'll just say things, you know, about her, like, what are you eating? You know do Canadians eat different food?
She can still hear us. I can still hear you.
Do you eat different food up there, A?
A?
A? He's like, so California, you know, like, tell me for sure. I got to be stereotypical California. So, oh, my goodness. You sent me some stuff in Facebook, Miss Nancy, that I was remiss in, because I was still coming out of my strange shell that I was in. What was going on with you? You had something happen, and I don't remember all the details.
I was on Facebook one day, and I saw a picture of this young woman, and it says, you know, please share, she's missing. And
that's it. Yes.
Her eyes, I was drawn into her eyes. And I just started seeing things. Like if I was, I would see things from like a third person. And then I would see things from like through her. And I saw that she was, this. She went missing January 1st. I think they found her like January 10th. She, her car, I think it was a light colored white Volkswagen. It was a little car. Not the place where I think it went off the road. And it went down like an embankment. And there was like trees and bushes and stuff. And it was stuck there. And she was, her body was in a very awkward position. And I could feel how cold she was. Looking from the opposite, she was not on the driver's side of the car. She might have been on the passenger side or out of the passenger side of the car, but she was looking through the car, through the driver's side window or the open door, and I could see this a big piece of lumber, like a header, that was kind of like that diagonally hanging on this hillside, this ravine, whatever.
Oh, my God.
And all I could get from her is that she was very cold and she wanted her mom. And I was trying to figure out where exactly she was because I have a problem with that. And so I kind of like went back up to the road and I could see that there was this building that was a house that is now a business. And it was white and it had kind of like an orange colored roof. And the corner of this building pointed to, if you follow the line of that, the corner of that building across the highway, that's where she went off the road. But I didn't know exactly, I couldn't see a mile marker. I couldn't see anything like that, and I was just very frustrated. And I just, I didn't, you know, I didn't know how to find her. And even though if I found her, she might have been already gone, but I thought it would be good if anybody could do anything to help bring closure to her parents.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of like, you know, that kind of got me, kind, you know, for a little bit there.
Did
so.
And it, that turned out to be a real accident.
Yes, they did find her.
Yeah.
They found her in a ravine. Yeah. She was, of course, she was pet.
And with, where was she at? I mean, where was this accident at?
I think it was someplace like in Contra Costa County. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look for it. Her name was Sarah Allred. S-A-R-A-H. It's either A-L-A-R-I-D or A-L-R-I-D. They said that they found her out of the vehicle.
Oh, my goodness.
She died of blunt force trauma to her head.
Wow.
So I didn't know when I looked through her eye if it was like if she was still alive or residual energy. I didn't know how you could tell at that point.
That's, I mean, that happened up here in El Dorado County, where I'm at. There's a famous case of a woman who was killed off of a curve just outside of Placerville, heading towards Lake Tahoe. And this actually ended up on Unsolved Mysteries, and it's been talked about on plenty of other shows. The woman had a young boy in the car with her, and she was immediately killed. And the child was injured, but, you know, not badly, but was basically unable to get extricate himself from the situation. And he laid there with his dead mother, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was getting to the point where the child was in such a danger of dying from exposure that there was I don't remember if it was a man or a woman was driving by, but someone was driving by and looked over and saw a naked woman laying on the side of the road, and they jumped out, stopped. It was a couple, I think. And a woman saw the naked woman, and she got her husband to pull over, and they went over and looked. And here was the accident, you know. And it was just amazing. I mean, they will go to great lengths to try to get to somebody that's receptive. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that they would pick somebody, you know. And it's funny, I mean, you know, you've never met this person, but yet their spirit has come to you. And for whatever reason, which there's no way of knowing, these things happen. And so you absolutely, this is a very real phenomenon.
The picture of her on Facebook was like she was standing there and looking up, and the picture was like taken of from above, and so she was looking at her eyes. I was just drawn into her eyes, and I just got this feeling of the type of person that she was, and it was like, I don't know, I can't say it was innocence, but it was, you know, a freshness about her, and I just fell right into it, and I could not get it out of my mind, and all these thoughts started happening. And so then I thought, okay, I'm going to do my best just to be receptive to figure this out. And then that's when I saw these things, and it's very frustrating.
It's very frustrating to not
be able to help somebody.
It was funny. I was just talking with Debbie about premonitions. Same kind of thing. She has some gifts in those areas, and I've had my share of these things, and we've seen disasters before they happened. And we were talking about today about 9/11, and I also had a very personal experience because of my work in the spacecraft industry. And I was actually plotting one of the space shuttle turbopumps with an engineer. Worked for a company, I won't say the full name, but ATSC was our acronym, and I did tactical. We were doing tactical systems, but I was cooperating with our solids division because we had a plotter that they could use. So I was working with this engineer, and it was 3 days before the Challenger blew up, and we had a discussion about the potential failure of the turbopump, and that's when I actually saw the accident, and it was just horrifying, and then a number of other very strange things happened just prior to it. And then when I got to work, the radios were on all over the plant, and people were walking in the halls and were crying. You know, it was just, and when I went over to one of the engineers that I was really dear friends with, I walked over to him, and he just was in tears. And he said, you know, he told me the whole thing that happened. And later on, he showed me actual drawings of the failure points because our company had bid on the solid boosters, and showed me why it failed. And he knew why it failed ahead of everybody else. I mean, he, before it even made the news, he was saying, I know what the problem was, and this is it, and we predicted this. And it was just stunning, you know. But these things happen because I don't think it's because that you can, quote, do something about it. I think it's like... if you throw a rock in a very still pool of water and the ripples go out and every animal there picks up on the vibration, that's sort of what's happening. And it's not personal to you. It's just you happen to be in the right place to pick that up, or you had the right sensory gear for mediums and psychics and people who are, have a little extra sight and are sensitive to these things, you pick this stuff up. It's not a function of you are meant to, you are not meant to be able to prevent it. But in your case, there was, I think, a personal aspect because you are picked. That's slightly different, where this spirit saw you as potentially receptive and picked you to talk with because she's looking for help. And so, that's a slightly different twist on it, but it's the same sort of thing. It's a ripple in a pond. And it's just striking to me that the spirit world works these ways,
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still as blown away by mediumship and by all of these things that happened. To me, they're miraculous still. I mean, it doesn't get old for me. You know, the stories, when we have people on and the stories that come out, and you hear, you know, you'll hit on, I'll use the system that I'm trained under, and I have to have faith in that, and I read off the symbols I get, and oh my God, you know, I mean, they come alive, and stories come pouring out of people, and you just are like, wow. And then you don't remember the reading 3 days later.
Huh.
You know, I mean, that's for our own protection as mediums too. I mean, that's kind of a built-in benefit, and also it's a problem because people come to you, oh, that reading you did for me 6 months ago, and you're going, I don't remember it. Sorry, you're going to have to refresh me. And then you'll remember little bits and pieces, and it starts to come back, you know, but really we don't retain that stuff. It's really not our reading. We're just a telephone, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it to me, though, the whole thing is just, I look at it now and I feel just as mystified as when I first started. I don't know. And it's, I'm going to keep trying to do fresh and interesting things, but, you know, I kept up while I was off on my little hiatus. I had a ticket to go see John Edward. And January 13th, I went out to Santa Rosa and drove out. And I was originally going to go spend the weekend out by Bodega and then, you know, cruise back and catch the show on my way back. But I decided to go down and just do the show, you know, made the drive and then just drove home right after. And I was in the audience and John Edward looked over first reading, first thing, and I was just praying that my father would come through. And for the entire, he was on there 2 hours, and for 1 hour he was in our section, and everything that he said, he didn't pick me, but everything he said, including all of my family names, including mine, and all of these things about how my father passed, and all of the things that, you know, including he used the word Trinity, which I suddenly recognized why he said Trinity. Other people were hitting and missing, and I realized my father's working double time on this. My father worked at the Trinity test site. He worked at White Sands. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it got better from there. I mean, he talked about a man that kept having trouble with his throat, and he always was choking, and that was my father. My father had a stricture of the throat that had to be, he had dangerous surgeries twice a year like clockwork to expand the scar tissue in his throat. Mm-hmm. And so that was another thing. Then he talked about the stroke and his passing. And by the time it was done, it was like, you know, I mean, there were other readings going on all around me. I mean, it was just weird how he picked that section, and all these people who'd had similar things were all around me, but he picked my mother's middle name, my sister's full name, including her middle name, came through, and I'm sitting there with my hand up going, gotta pick me, and he just kept going around me, and it was amazing. I mean, to have a world-class medium like that hitting all those things, and yet I didn't get picked, but I really didn't care so much about that. It was like, I came out of there, I'd heard from my father, you know, and so to me, it just is, it's a miracle. The whole process works the way it does. All these people were either getting, you know, were getting validations. And in the meantime, in this Me Too party that's going on, you know, my father's coming through and letting me know personally, dude, you know, I was talking to him on the way down going, Dad, you've got to work your butt off to get through this. I don't care how you do it. You've got to come through for us. You know, and so when I kind of came home and told Mom, she just was just blown away, you know. And I actually got to meet him, which was kind of almost a letdown, because meeting the man, you know, I had a little lesson from that. You know, I'm a member of the Five, and it's like a group you kind of pay into once a year, and then you get to go to special events with him, and that's cool. And so I thought, well, what the hell, you know, I'll go up and stand in line and go through the whole thing. And so they kind of move you through like cattle, and he's got security guards around him. And then I came up and I had my little card, and he's like, I think I understand why, because I do this work, you know. he put up a wall, and it was like you could feel it. And he sat there and gave me the once over, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I mean, this guy is really mad, you know. And it was just like a don't touch me, don't get near me, you know, kind of a thing. And I suddenly realized here we are in the height of the flu season, and he's on the road. And so I think it's part that he is he allows you the window of his personality to come out, and then he shuts the door on it, and you're done. And he has his life on the other side, you know, with his private family life. And I can get behind that. I can understand that. But it was very strange. And when I came out, I'm like going, that dude was pissed off. And I had some time to think about it coming home, and I went, wait a minute, you know, I know better than that. I understand, you know. And so, I mean, he's got his life, and it's the way it is. But I don't know that I want to meet him again.
Don't they do that just for protection also?
Yeah,
I would think that they'd have to, you know, anybody that does anything really heavy duty psychically, that they probably, if they're out in the public, you know, I mean, you don't necessarily have to have a person touch you to taint you. And, you know, if you're going to be, if this is your living and you're making your living doing readings and everything like that, I would think that you'd have to be very careful about different energies around you.
Absolutely.
And you never know what kind of whack jobs are drawn into this sort of thing.
I have had my, just in my...
You've had your share.
You know, I mean, you know what I've been through, and it's... you know, there are people that will follow you around, and there's others that will come in. You know, we have had our problems with BTR, with number of individuals, you know, just, and we're very careful with that now. I can only imagine what somebody at his level of national exposure goes through. So, I mean, I had some time to think about it, but I still looked at it and went, wow, you know, I think the only way I'd want to meet him again is in a private situation where it was like a one-on-one read or something like that. But I really got what I needed out of that, you know. It was really, when I had time to think it through, it's like my father busted his ass to get through and did, you know, and he pulled it off, you know, and that was amazing. I mean, when I told Mom, her eyes were just bug-eyed, I mean, because it was all, you know, especially when he said my sister's full, middle, and last name, and it was coming through, and two of the names were back to back, and him just spitting it out, and then he picked the middle name, in it very shortly after, and I'm going, oh my God, you know, dude, you're hitting me, and I'm going, dude, pick me, and he wouldn't pick me, you know, and I was just thinking, man, I've learned one thing too though, because I talked with a few people after, and you sort of have to stand up. You sort of have to get his attention by standing up and, you know, go for it that way. So in the future, if I do that again, I'll remember that. But I came away immediately gratified. I mean, my dad did some amazing stuff, and he worked his butt off. I knew he did, you know. So
you got a reading without getting a reading.
Yeah, it was stunning. I mean, you know, it was like, the deck of the studio or the place I was in has two different levels, and so there was a bunch of seats above us and right behind me, and so the people above and right behind me and actually a little to the right, that's, he was talking about the name, you know, the middle name which my mother has, to that person, and so it was all dancing around me, and I was at the very center of this whole thing, and I'm sitting there going, it was like a freaking sun, and I've got planets orbiting around me, and I'm like, I'm the guy. You know, and I was just absolutely blown away. I mean, it's funny. You do this work and you know it's real, and yet when you need the reading as a medium, and you can't read yourself, you know. I mean, I'm sorry. I wish, I don't know too many mediums that really read themselves very well. Man, I mean, to have that come from somebody that good at it. You know, it just, wow, nothing better.
That's great.
Yeah, so.
That's great.
I mean, despite all the personal stuff, you know, with the come to terms with the death and all that, knowing he's okay, you know, and having that come through was meant the world to me, you know. Mm. And I was just coming off the testosterone thing, too. was in the second week. I let me tell you what, the first week was hell. I mean, day one, I was having all, my head felt like it just went really big. And then, then I felt like, you know, that one scene from Beetlejuice where the guy's head got swollen.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it was just 3 or 4 days of craziness. And then I started having just strange feelings like my joints would start hurting, you know, and my hands were just, I was fidgety. I'll admit it.
Is this from the meds? Well, is this your reaction from the meds or is this before
Absolutely.
The meds?
It was the reaction to the testosterone reintroduction, and it was like your body was waking up, but man, it kicked my butt. And I was watching TV for a few days in a row where I'd watch TV and I'd see a sad show and I'd start crying.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, on the prairie. Oh, God. And I'm like, oh, no, this is not good. But and I kept wondering, you know, do I call the doctor? Do I ask if, you know, what else is going to happen to me? Am I going to sprout onions, you know, out of my ears or what, you know? And after week two, it started to kind of you know, get better. But I'm glad I didn't lose it in the middle of all that. You know, here I am just coming to terms with this medicine inside of me, and I'm at this reading. You know, that would have been bad.
Yeah. I think your dad helped you.
it's just so weird how this all works. I mean, it's funny. A lot of people have different views of the other side. I was in yesterday getting a massage, and the therapist who was working on me, she's Christian, and I'm essentially Christian, but she's like into church Christian, and she was really. We were in an interesting discussion, and she was like very, very questioning about my work that I do. And I said, look, you know, in the Bible it's replete with discussions of people who are gifted and psychic. And she totally agreed with that. And she finally fessed up. She goes, look, I'm not having a problem with these abilities, but. And then she goes, I'm a healer, and I've tried to make it work, and I've wanted more gifts, and I'm going, well, it doesn't work that way. And so it was a very interesting discussion, and she finally fessed up, and I went, don't you think that you're doing healing now by working on me and making me feel better? And she goes, well, yeah. And I said, what else do you do? And she had some other things she was into, and I said, look, just because I'm a medium doesn't mean that I'm better than you. And I'm gifted in this area, it's because I signed up to do this work. Just as you picked this mission to do, and the work you're doing is just as spiritual as anything that I'm doing, okay? I said, but if you really want to do that, then ask for it. And, you know, ask that these gifts be given, and then take it seriously and work with it. And she just, like, the light bulb went on, you know, she's looking at me like, oh. And I said, you know, she's in her 20s, and I said, look, you're going to, as you get older, you're going to see more things and more dimensions. And I said, you study the Bible quite a bit. There's a lot more to it than just reading stuff on the surface, as you well know. Give it time to simmer and look at it, and then go out and keep talking to people like me. And so very interesting stuff. I mean, she gave me some things to think about. I've got some, I've got a reading assignment for, because I go back in March and see her. So that's going to be interesting. I mean, she's going to come back with some things, and I've got some things for her. And but I find it I'm just, you know, and it made me think about where I'm at too, you know, and I'm just going to say it again, I'm no less mystified by mediumship than I was when I first started. I don't understand how some of this stuff works, but it just does. And so I have faith, you know, I have faith that the messages I'm getting are right and true. And she was all worried about it. She's going, well, don't you know it could be from the deceiver? And I'm going, I don't think so. I think when I'm getting messages of love and they're being validated, I don't think so. I think that these are true messages from heaven, from the other side. And that's with God's blessing, because he understands. You know, he understands the pain people are going through, and they need those messages. And she could get behind that. So, but now, I mean, I'm looking at it now, and I have such an appreciation now, you know, having gone through tragedy and seeing, you know, my father go through madness and all these things that have happened, to now be at this point. And I'm not feeling bad about myself with it. You know, I don't feel sorry for myself. What I feel is that, hey, I went through a necessary passage, and now I've got another thing I'm learning. You know, and, you know, now that I feel better, we got stuff to do, man.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just another thing in life. It's just another lesson to go through and another lesson to learn. And not that all the lessons that you still have to learn in life are going to be about losing somebody dear to you, but there's a whole bunch more. And a lot of us, as adults, we think we've gone through most of our learning experiences through formal schooling. Well, yeah. That's nothing, because life is the real teacher.
Absolutely.
And as long as you're alive, you're going to have experiences. You're going to keep learning. And the thing that you said about, you know, what you said about, what didn't you think, we worried that it might be the deceiver, you know, giving you messages.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This is something that I take issue with when people are talking about the deceiver, meaning the Antichrist or whatever, the devil, whatever.
You must not be named.
I know. Well, I have a few names for him. But anyway, I just remember hearing about this when I was a kid. And I thought, what am I supposed to do? What if he came, like, in my kid thinking, what if this Antichrist person was here? And what if I didn't have, like, my mom and dad or my family to protect me? How would I know? If he is so deceptive, how would I know if this was, yeah, you know, the real thing or not? And then you know what I told myself? My little kid thinking, which I still go according to even today, I would just have to do the best that I could and just know what is right and follow that no matter what anybody else was telling me. I would just do the right thing. And that's what
it.
A lot of people have to understand. They know what's right inside of them already. If they don't, they've got a problem. They better figure it out. And as long as you know what's right inside you, you have a pretty well-laid path in front of you.
That's right. I mean, when we come in, we have an inborn morality, an inborn knowledge. And, you know, I've basically just trusted my instincts, which have served me pretty well. And it's when you try to look past something that you know down deep is a great truth, and you just want to look past it because you're uncomfortable dealing with it. And you build either a structure around it so that you can avoid looking at it, or you just gloss by it and knowing full well what you're doing, that's when you're getting in trouble. And so, you know, I really check myself, and I make mistakes. I still do. I mean, I'm still going to, you know, mess up on things. But, you know, the point is remain humble. Don't get caught up in that you're glorious because you do this work. You know, and this applies to anything. It doesn't matter if it's mediumship or politics or you know, changing oil. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's just, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing with your life? And can you make somebody else's life better by the work that you do? And are you on the path that you should be on? You know, that's the stuff that matters. You know, and knowing that your loved ones who crossed are doing A-okay, and the message is there that life is eternal and that they are there and they care enough about you to try to come through. And not only that, God cares enough about you to provide a little window that you could do that. So that's how I see it.
Yeah.
Well, hey,
and
you know
I agree.
What? We've got 55 minutes remaining in the show. I'm going to go ahead and do a brief break. I've got something I want to play for you guys. I've got a special thing. In these hard and difficult times, there comes a man who has a unique take on things. And although this man is no longer alive, I find his views, as you can tell, something's coming. I find his views very enlightening. And this man was wise beyond his years back in 1969 when this movie was made. So I'm going to go look for this movie And let's just say it's all about the first thing you know. So this is SoulStream on blogtalkradio.com. We're going to be out for 2 minutes 45 seconds. Listen to the words and learn. Here we go.
Horn there.
Pound of sugar and a 2-pound sack of flour, please. Evening. Horace Tabor, Worcester, Massachusetts.
When did you get in?
Arrived this morning. Hit a vein this afternoon. And I aim to be back in Worcester by Christmas. It says here, California is going to be admitted to the Union. Just what it needs. Law and order. That's good news.
Well, it ain't to me. It's been my unrelenting policy to bust out any territory the day I become a state and head for another wilderness.
I don't agree, sir.
Well, I don't want to hear about it. All I know is when you look around at the human race, you gotta wonder what the hell God was thinking about.
Oh. God made the mountains. God made the sky. God made the people. God knows why. He fixed up the planet as best as he could. Then in come the people and gum it up good. The first thing you know, they civilized the foothills and everywhere he put hills, the mountains and valleys below. They come along and take them and civilize and make them a place where no civilized person would go. The first thing you know, the first thing you know, they civilize what's pretty by putting up a city where nothing that's pretty can grow. They muddy up the winter and civilize it into a place too uncivilized even for snow. The first thing you know, they civilize left, they civilize right, till nothing is left, till nothing is right. They civilize freedom till no one is free, no one except, by coincidence, me. The first thing you know, the boozer's in prison and the criminal he isn't, and only the rascals have dough. When I see a parson, I gotta put my arse in a wagon that follows the tail of a crow. The first thing you know, I pitch up and blow. The first thing you know.
Walk like an Egyptian. Walk like an Egyptian.
Last night you were unhinged. You were like some desperate howling demon. You frightened me.
Do it again.
God, I love that woman.
You frightened me.
Do it again. Men like that. You know, women have got it made. I mean, they know how to twist that little thing, and a guy just goes, "Oh, really? Oh, okay, I'll do what you want. I'll do it again.
I'll do that."
Oh, dear God, it's so good to be back in the chair. I mean, I'm in my dining room. I've never broadcast from inside the house like this. I'm actually in the dining room, and I will never do it again. Let that. The sound of my central air system, my central air system is doing just fine. Thank you. Anyway,
but it's not coming through. We can't hear it here.
You can't hear it? Oh God. Well,
no.
Maybe that's a good thing because I'm hearing it like really badly. But maybe there's some filtration or something going on. But I can hear it like crazy. I'm used to the. My studio being perfect, you know, and when you're in a different environment doing the broadcasting, it's like everything is magnified tenfold. You know, you're just like, oh God, I bet this sounds awful on air. How is this microphone, by the way?
It sounds good.
Does it sound pretty good? Yeah, this is a blue, it's actually I think it's called the Blue Yeti. Now, let me just pull it forward. Yeah, it's the Blue Yeti USB microphone, and I got this thing. Spencer Hughes was a friend of mine that he's at Berkshire Fox News, and he got into this thing like a couple of years ago, and he got one, and he was raving about it, and I collect microphones. Oh, hi. Hi, Mom. Are you going to bed, Mom? Come on in here a minute. Say hi to everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Everybody say hello, Mom. Chat room.
Hi, Mom.
Everybody says hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
Okay, good night, folks.
You're tired? You've had a good
night.
Okay, so she cleaned the back of the house. She's getting the same disease I've got. We're starting to get this place in gear. So the poor woman is, you know, she's been through it. So she's actually feeling better. What a concept. And her central hair system is doing well, too, by the way. Just want you to know. Is your central hair system doing well, Mom?
Your central what?
Your central hair system. She said, sinful what?
It's going to smack you, John.
Oh.
Say what?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Good night, Mom. Have a nice night. It's weird at this house.
It's going to smack you.
It's kind of nice to have. She normally doesn't see me on air. You know, I'm usually down in the studio, and I've got something I'm going to do to address that because I want her to be part of the show and be able to listen in. So I'm going to put I'm putting an AM transmitter down at the studio, and I'll just have her tune into AM radio, and it's a short range broadcast, so she'll be able to pick it up and she can hear everything that goes on, you know. Because handing my mother a computer is kind of like putting somebody who, you know, who has never seen a car before, who rode horses, and then you hand her a computer, it ain't going to happen, you know. But she can operate a radio pretty good, so I'm going to give her that, and that way she can be part of the show. But kind of nice to have her walk by. I have her get to, because usually she's self-conscious around this stuff. You know, I had her on the show once before, and she just completely locked up and was just like, "I'm afraid. I'm on. You know, the spotlight's on me." And I was like trying to reassure her. You know, but now she's like relaxed about it. Actually, it's pretty cool. So anyway, let's see, where are we at right now? I got two callers out there, but their hands are not up, so I'm not going to answer those. So hi to you two out there. Let's see, I'll read off Castle 407. We got Curious Times Chris in Canada. Chris is in Canada. Canada. All right. And Betty Wells, my dear, dear friend who helped me with everything. And she does not live in Canada. And let's see, Denise in PA. Pa? Denise and Pa. And Doxy. Oh, dear God, I can't say that. You said that well. Say it again.
Doxy Russ?
One.
Doxy Russ, one?
One.
Come in, come in.
That's harder to say than Canada. Then, let's see, Kimberly. Oh, Gabriel. I just skipped Gabriel. Sorry. Kimberly.
Nancy,
Mom. My dear, dear friend out there in the wilds of the Bay Area. Rebecca Bryson. Hello. And she's got her little cat on. She's got her little cat. And let's see, Baiko Dan. And he was interested in my quadcopter. And he wanted to know about the kit version. I'm going to say some things that are going to sound highly technical now. So stand forewarned. You are going to hear technical things on my show. Normally I do spiritual things. Tonight you're going to hear technical things. So, Dan, let me tell you how this works. I've got a fully assembled quadcopter. This runs with the DJI Innovations NASA board system. And it has everything's preloaded. Everything's ready to go right out of the box. So I flew it right out of the box. But DJI also sells the NASA board system so you can build your own quadcopters. And I found a great company, and I'm normally not doing commercials on here, but I'm just going to break my own rules and just do it. There's a company called aquacopter.com, and they sell these really high-impact shells that you can put your NASA boards in or any of the other quadcopter boards in, and you're able to actually put these things. You know, you can fly them and land them right on the water and get them all wet, and they can take right off again. And they can take high-impact collisions and things like that. So my next major purchase after I get through equipping this copter is to get a second one that'll be done for water work, which I'm going to go out and fly out at the lakes and at the ocean and things like that. So if it does fall and land in the water, it's perfectly fine. It's totally sealed from the environment, and I can go grab it and get back to work, you know, and I can land it on the water and do all kinds of stuff. So there you go, you know, Dan, take it down, aquacopter.com, and then look for NASA, N-A-Z-A, and DJI, you know, Digital Innovations. I think it's DJI Innovations is the company. And so they have a whole range of this stuff. It's just fascinating. I mean, the ability to fly it and then actually see first-person view from the copter with the television transmitters, it's like a god's eye view. And I was just fascinated from the moment I saw that. When I was sick, I was just sitting back and was surfing YouTube, and I just happened to catch this. And I started researching it more, and I got really into it. So while I was sick, I was actually sitting there, you know, watching these videos, and I just happened to run into the Phantom, the DJI Phantom model. And it's interesting that I would buy a quadcopter named a Phantom. You get it? I'm a ghost hunter. I bought a Phantom. So I've got this white, and it's actually a beautiful white machine. It's absolutely dead white, and it's a Phantom. I've got a flying Phantom on my haunted property. I found that humorous. I thought that was cool. Don't you? Come on.
Yes.
Nancy.
Yes.
Okay. See. Huh?
White,
huh?
Like Jasper?
It? Huh? Huh? Anyway, I mean, I went off on that tangent, but flight is just so amazing to me. I've been around the aerospace business my whole life, and you know, I had the chance in 2010. I flew a Chinese Air Force. Here I am. I've been in the business of defending my country for my entire life, and my first experience in an airplane is in a Chinese-made fighter trainer. So I'm flying a commie airplane. I fly a commie airplane, and I'm dedicated to fighting these very people. And I'm like, wow, this is interesting. This life is strange. But I flew that and did, you know, aerobatics, and I got I hit 3.4 Gs. So at 200 pounds times 3.4, what's that? 600 and 620 pounds, something like that, 640. So I actually sustained that kind of force on my body and was just, you know, and actually lived through it. And now I want to do 4Gs. So I'm working every angle to get up again on that same plane and do that again. But the ability to actually fly and see things is a primal human thing. And I think a lot of people would give anything, you know, and look at it from the aspect of a spirit. You know, when someone passes, imagine what it's like for them when they have the ability to go anywhere, do anything, and they realize they're not confined to the ground anymore. They can go through walls, they could go up in the air, they can go up into orbit, and they can look down. Let me put it this way to you. Where would you go? And I'm going to put this to the audience. Just stop and think about this tonight. You know, if you don't think about it now, think about it later. Let's say you had the ability to go anywhere, be anything, and not be anything, but be anywhere, go anywhere in three dimensions. Where would you go? What would you do? I mean, think about that, you know. And I mean, I'm actually doing something about it in real life. I mean, I'm actually going to be able to fly above trees and skim in near buildings and do amazing photography and do all kinds of stuff. But I'll actually be able to wear goggles and it'll look like I'm in the plane, you know, and I'll be able to see it. And I'll do the videos and you'll see those. And I'll put the links out for that stuff later on when I'm back in my regular studio. But it's just the coolest thing ever, you know. But think about it. I mean, now, Nancy, where would you go? I'm going to put you on the spot. Where would you go?
Well, first of all, I would have to walk in and out of walls a couple of times just for the heck of it. And then I would, of course, I'd like to fly all by myself without any kind of mechanical help or aid or anything like that. And the fact that I would be invisible would be what I've always wanted. And then I'd like to play tricks on people and move things, you know. And, of course, I would be there to protect all my family and friends. But I think it would really be neat to be invisible and play tricks on people. But then I would fly, like, to, you know, anywhere. I would just probably just jump off and go in one direction and see where it took me and how many places I could go and how far I could go and until I got bored and come back and then try another direction. And, you know, I don't know. I'm still here in this plane. I can't even think of what it's like in that plane.
Well, you know, it's actually kind of funny. I've asked other people this sort of along the same lines of this question, and that's pretty much a pretty standard thing of, you know, you're trying to figure out your capabilities and then the idea that you're going to play tricks on people. And that's sort of what my father's doing right now. I mean, he's like playing with the door now. He's figured out the door, you know, mm-hmm. So he's doing that. But, you know, I've had some time to look at it from a mediumship view, and I've studied this quite a bit, and I thought about it, and I went, you know, I would like to find out, go to every congressman and senator I really don't like and haunt them for a year. You know, go from office to office, just freaking them out, you know. So when they're about ready to do something, you know, in some dirty deal behind the scenes, you just freak them out and you frustrate their efforts. That would be a public service.
Chris would think he'd like to teleport to Mars.
Yeah, Chris would like to teleport to Mars, and you know what they're going to find? They're going to find a lot of Canadians there already. It's true.
I would just like to go into. I'd like to. No, I haven't been to Mars. I've been to a star, but I'd like to. Outer space and look, sit on a planet and look at other planets.
That's something I've had some thought about it from with regard to this show. You know, you've heard of 7 degrees of separation, right? You know, where mm-hmm. you're connected through 7 different people to anyone on Earth. So, you know, anybody famous that you would want to get to, if you made the right connections, just started with somebody you know, who knows somebody, within 7 people, you'll be able to get connected to this famous person or this person you want to get hold of. And that's. Yeah, where was I going with this?
I'm not too sure.
It's just that...
It has something to do with teleporting?
Yeah. I mean, what the hell was I thinking there? I lost track of what I was thinking. The testosterone isn't working as well as I thought. Damn it. But, you know, at 7 degrees of separation, I mean, it's the ability to communicate with, you know, be able to get in touch with anybody you want, you know, just through that little bit of effort. I got that thought and I lost it. It's I worked my butt off today and I'm tired. It's caught up with me. Debbie, you made me work too hard. Debbie, are you there? Type something, Debbie. You caused this. I'm now getting senile. So anyway.
You know, I have
and I can't remember why I was saying 7 degrees of separation. You know,
I thought it was 6 degrees.
No, it's seven degrees. Yeah, so you could actually get in touch with the thing is you can get in touch with anybody and be able to you know get a rapport going with them you know if they're open to it. So you can. Yeah, literally, you can get into that. I mean, and I kind of tested that out, and I've had some pretty interesting things happen. I met somebody who actually, through 3 degrees of separation, knew Saddam Hussein. It just blew my mind. Right. And knew his kids, and it was like, holy crap. And it turned out to be somebody that had come over from, you know, from that part of the world who was doing massage therapy, and I got into a conversation with him. He started telling me the stories about him playing soccer when he was in Iraq against some of these guys. So you just get blown away by it. You know, so you ask people about the famous folks they've known. And I dare you to do that, all of you out there. I've met a lot of famous people in my day. You know, I've got, you know, 20, 30 famous people I've met. You know, I've met Ronald Reagan. I've met all kinds of Hollywood actors. I mean, I was on the Haunted Highway last year.
Fact, it is 6 degrees of separation, John.
Oh,
I'm right.
It is 6 degrees.
Denise
well,
in Pennsylvania said, yay, thank you, Denise.
Oh, thank God for correcting me. That's why I had the thought go south down. So, yeah, that's why the thought went south on me. I was all screwed up. That's it. So, Denise in PA, in PA, Denise in PA,
mm-hmm.
It is 6 degrees of separation, and she says with authority. And so now she has to tell us all about it. So she has to.
You know
me.
What? Can I tell you a little bit about my thing with 6 degrees of separation? Now, this is really weird, but this is kind of like the story of my life.
Uh-huh.
My daughter's significant other, his name is Mark, we went over to the house, his house for Christmas. I met his parents for the first time. His stepdad. His stepdad's brother is a guy I went to school with that lived down the street from me.
Whoa.
I know. And then when we were discovering this, we were all getting, my daughter was getting real scared because she thought, just tell me we're not related. Just please tell me we are not related because it's a little too late for that now.
Oh, no.
But it was so weird. So Mark's step uncle is a guy down the street that we went to school with. It just blew
wow.
everybody away, you know, because we were in this little community in San Leandro, and a lot of people don't know. It's called Washington Manor. A lot of people do not realize that this little section is called Washington Manor. And usually you don't know unless you've been through there, you know somebody from there, you live there, or whatever. So when people start throwing the manor around, you know, it can turn your head pretty darn quick, and that's what happened. And so it was just so funny. So that's my
story. That's like we built this property here in Shingle Springs. You know, when we first bought it, there was no structures on it, and it was just solid forest. I mean, we had a... oak trees that were literally a foot apart. I mean, we were cutting and burning for 5 years to get the yard where it's at now. And we got this property, and we'd been here a good 5-6 years. And there was a property on the north side of us that was owned by a nice gentleman, and we'd never met him, and nobody really had talked with our neighbor. I mean, you know, it was a big property, and one day my mother's out in the garden, and I happen to be out there, and she looks up and she sees this guy riding a horse, and she recognized him. And his name was Frank, and she'd gone to school with him, and he owned the property next door to us, and she had gone to school with him in the 50s out in Roseville.
Oh, jeez.
He was like our next-door neighbor, and we hadn't known for 5 years. It just like completely floored me. I'm like, how does that happen? You know, I've actually run into people I've known in airports before. I don't know. I mean, probably all of you have stories like that too. You know, you're in some unlikely place and you look over and there's somebody you know who's on the same plane, or they're, mm-hmm. you know, you're in the terminal and you look over and go, "Yo, Fred, how are you doing, man? It's good to see you." You know, you're just, how's that happen? Is there a synchronicity at work? Does the universe work that way? Are we wired to have these little like synchronous events that happen that just remind you there's a larger force at work? I think so.
I don't think there's anything like a coincidence. There is no such thing as a coincidence. I think things that we think that are coincidental are really meant to be for a reason, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's just that's to me what drives this whole, like, you know, all this stuff with the show and everything we do. It's you're looking for, we're very interesting as human beings, because it's funny, I don't remember where I read this, but someone really kind of got it right. Every person on Earth is basically a physicist doing research on the nature of the universe, and I think that's true. And children especially, they're trying to figure it out, you know, and they're looking for novel things that stand out, that try to define the environment they're in. And depending on their talents, you know, some are into art, you know, some are singers, some are, you know, physicists, some are, you know, scientists, some are radio show hosts, you know, who do this part-time, you know. But it's this thing that we all do. We're driven by it for different reasons, but we're driven by the same forces, you know. And what's funny is, like things seem to attract, and it's like threads, you know. They come together in the strangest ways. You know, it's like a knotted thread. You know, you can ball up a bunch of thread, and it's still all connected. But we as human beings don't understand how that, you know, you can't just take it apart easy. It's got to be unthreaded, but there's a logic to it. And yet when you look, you know, the two different threads are touching in an area, and it just happens to be that they're related, you know. So, I mean, it's kind of a rough analogy, but I mean, you get the point of what I'm putting out there. So these things do happen, you know, and it's just, to me, it's just, that's the miraculous nature of the universe, that, you know, no matter where you go, there's going to be a surprise, you know, and it's always just beneath the surface. There's always something going on. So, you know, and every time I start to think that, you know, it gets predictable, then it does something to get my attention, you know, and so we're back to this whole thing with the ghosts here in the house. And here I am, I'm actually broadcasting from Spook Central in my home. My father likes to haunt the living room, so I'm right. And I should broadcast next time from the living room. Maybe he would make an appearance for me. I don't know. Pop, are you there? Can you come through for me? If he did, I would freak out. Whoa, Dad! And he probably will tonight. He'll come and tug on me. I actually felt him once. There was about 3 months after he died, I was sitting there. I had just gotten into bed, and I laid down, and I was still wide awake. I didn't even turn out the light 5 seconds, and I was just settling into bed, getting my comfortable for the night, and I felt the cover move, and I felt a hand touch my arm and squeeze my arm and then let go and stand back, and you could feel him there. And when I talked to my mother about it, she'd had the same thing happen. And it's a very real physical thing. They have the ability to interact with us. They have the ability to squeeze our, a part of your body, or touch you or push you. And we've had that on more violent investigations where we've had real serious interactions with hostile spirits. But more often than not, it's them just, you know, they'll go to the extra effort to do something like that to get your attention. And he was just trying to comfort me. I was having a really rough time at that point with his passing. And so when he did that, that was a great comfort, you know. But It's still been rough. I mean, like I was talking about earlier, it's still a process, you know, the whole grief thing, you know. You just are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how long ago did your husband pass?
He passed away probably over 20 years ago. And it was about 25 years ago. And it was, for me, it was really, really rough. Because here I am. This was the last thing I ever wanted in my life, is to be a single mom. I always wanted to have that nuclear family if I'm going to have a kid. And so it was like, okay, here I am. And I was very angry at him for a very long time for leaving me.
Yeah.
And I would talk to him in the shower. And I was just upset with him. And he had a heart problem, and he didn't tell me about it.
Oh, boy.
So I felt I was really, really upset and hurt, you know. And I had to work through that. A lot of people didn't know that. So I had to work through that hurt. Then I had to work through the grief. But it was one heck of a learning process. My mom said something really fantastic about me the night that Larry died. Some neighbors were there, and they said, "Well, what's Nancy going to do? She's going to be here all by herself with Stacia. I mean, what's going to happen, you know?" And my mom said, "I never have to worry about Nancy. Out of all my kids, she's the strongest one. And if she wants to do something, she will do it. If she wants to go someplace, she will get there. I've never had to worry about her." And I was in the back of my head, all this other stuff going on in my head. I just said, "Well, Mom, thanks, you know. That's so cool." But I had to learn how to be strong in a different manner. And as a woman, you kind of have to watch out for yourself a little bit more. And if you have a child, you have to watch out for yourself a little extra more than that. And I found that out. And a lot of people try to tell you how to live your life. And they think that you're weak. And a man will come into your life and try to be the big guy, you know, and everything. And I'll protect you and... I'm thinking, I don't need that. And I finally decided, I came up with this little saying that says, I don't think anybody's got the right to tell me what to do unless they're paying. They're contributing to the pot.
That's
and
good.
I've come right out and said that several times to people. And I said, you don't want to have part of this? You don't have a right to say anything. And that's just what I needed to say. And I felt so, I not only was saying it for me, I was saying it for my daughter. I was also showing her an example. Because when she grows up, you know, they say that, was it Khalil Gibran that said that example is the best teacher?
That's true.
And I remembered that. And so, I just tried to teach my daughter how to get through grief, tried to teach my daughter how to stand up on her own two feet, tried to let her know what it's like to be empowered. And I think that's one of the most precious things I ever gave her. So it was a process. It was really a process, and it took a long time to get through. And you know what? There were times, since my daughter was so young, that we revisited his loss again. It was like an anniversary thing. My daughter would happen every fall, every Halloween, because he passed in November. And but for me, it was like when she graduated from elementary school. the big things. I mean, the birthdays were hard, but when she graduated from elementary school, things that he should have been there for. When she graduated from middle school, things he should have been there for. When she graduated from high school, that was very hard. When she graduated from college, I could not even take a picture at her graduation. I was crying so hard.
Wow.
But I was so proud of her. But in my head, I'm saying, you should have been here. And if, you know, like, I'm sure he was. I'm sure he was. But that was my way of saying, you made your choice. You're on that side. But you know what? I'm still on this side. And you are still going to hear from me. And I'm going to give you peace of my mind whenever I feel like it, you know. And it still continues.
It's funny.
So that's how that's affected me.
Yeah.
I still have a relationship with my husband in
that's
that manner.
How, yeah, I mean, I look at it, and I was actually praying for him to pass, to get out of it, you know. I mean, there was a point, it got so crazy it was right around January last year, and there was a day it got just completely out of kilter, and I could look at him and see he wanted out, and I went out in the backyard and I was just devastated. And I looked up and I just said to God, it's like, hey, you know, this can't keep going. I'm going to lose both of them. And then I've got this place by myself. There's no way, you know, I mean, I'm being selfish, but you know, mom's got to be able to get this operation she needs. And he's going, he wants out, he needs to check out. And I asked God, I said, put it in your hands, but you know, this is what I see. And what do you want to do with it? And I put it in God's hands, you know. And it was funny, on the day he passed, you know, it was February 27th, it was the day before, but he passed on 28th at 5 in the morning. And I got the call. I was at work, and I went tearing out. I get there, and he was all animated and happy and everything. And I'm going, what the hell did you call me for and do this? And then I find out he's on amazing amounts of oxygen just to stay alive. And I there was some moments where I got to be alone with him, and he grabbed me and says, I told him I was taking care of things at the ranch, and I told him I painted the front steps, you know, there's like this bunch of brick work on the front of the house that was peeling, and I finally just painted it. So I mentioned to him and said, hey, Dad, I took care of the paint thing on the front of the house. And he says, finally. And I said, I'm going to take care of things, Dad. You don't have to worry. And he grabbed my arm and he says, you take care of your mother. You do that for me. And I said, yes, sir, I will. And it was like, and he says, you will. And I went, yep, I'm going to be there. I said, I stuck it out this far. I'm not going to fail on it. And it was like the passing of the torch, you know. So, I mean, that's where I've been all this time, you know. So, yeah. I mean, it was so freaky. I think the thing that got to me was when it was all actually happening, because, you know, we had to make the decision to pull the meds, and mom couldn't do it, so I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were staging him down and getting him ready to cross. And I did fine until 1 in the morning, and I was standing there, and I turned around, and I actually saw this dark shadow, and it had an aura about it. It went walking by. And there was no face. And I felt my knees turn to rubber. and I was just completely blown away. And I mean, I just went, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And the nurse grabbed me, and she called me out. And on the way out, she said, what did you see? And I told her, and she said, that's the angel coming. And I said, I know. And I saw it, and it's here, and, you know, it's coming from my father, you know, and I'm freaking out. And they got me, she got me down and got me put in, they put me in a room with a bed and just let me sleep for a little while. And she says, when it's time, I'll come get you. And she did. She came in at 5 in the morning, and he passed at 5:15, actually. And so it was just an experience. And I look at it now, and I'm not mad because he's gone, because of what I saw him go through. It's just that I miss him.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to actually use some cuss words here, because, but yeah, when I, when I got into the paranormal, first things that, you know, he did is he was always worried about my reputation. And here he was. I mean, my father had seen extraordinary things. He was an extraordinary part of the American space program, and there were things he did that were just amazing. And he was very into me being perfect. And when he found out I was into all this, it just floored him. And he'd come up to me and go, you know, so you've seen a ghost today? And I go, well, yeah, matter of fact, I did. And he'd say, this is all bullshit. And he goes, this is all crap. I mean, you actually believe this crap. This is all bullshit. And those of you who have seen the BS video on my YouTube channel,
yes,
you can go out there and see my father.
Yes, about that.
Oh, my God, you know. And so, I mean, I told him the day he was going, I said, the one thing you're going to do for me when you get to the other side is you're going to come back and you're going to tell me that this ain't all bullshit. And he hasn't done it yet. But I am going to get my way on this. That sucker owes me. He owes me for all the things he did. He razzed me. He put me through hell. But, you know, the one thing that made me happy was the month, it was December of 2011. He was sitting in he was on his oxygen machine. He was in the den, and he had this chair, and he looked out, and we had spirits that were coming in to check on him because they knew it was getting time. And he saw a male ghost, and it turned out it was his father. My grandfather was a very famous, very well-known neurosurgeon. He was a research neurosurgeon. And he ran, he was on the board of directors for the State Mental Health Association in California and ran DeWitt Mental Hospital. You know, my grandfather did that. And he worked on criminal neuropsychiatric cases, so he was very well-known. And I had actually asked him to come back to help with Dad. And he did. And at the very end, Mom saw his mother come through and peek around the corner to check on him. And then Dad actually got to see his father, but he didn't recognize him. And Mom did. And but he saw his first ghost. And I came home, and Mom said, we've had a little conversion. And I go, what do you mean? And she goes, he saw one. And I went, he saw a ghost? He saw one, and I went, oh, my God. And so I couldn't wait. It was like a kid in a candy store. I go into the den. I go, Dad, I hear you had an experience. What'd you see? He goes, I saw a man, and he was there, and then he was not. And I go, well, what do you think that was? Were you hallucinating? No. I said, oh, so you've had a paranormal experience. You've seen a ghost. Well, yeah. I go, oh, so this isn't all bullshit. And then, well, yo, I've got to think about this. And so I said, you know, in 3 days you're going to come at me, you're going to tell me it didn't happen. And I it was like 3 days later he comes up to me and he says, I was wrong. And it's still bullshit. And I know, I mean, the look on his face, he kind of stayed away from the living room after that. He didn't want to be any part of it, you know. So I got him good. I got him good before he went. That was a crowning glory for me, you know. But he owes me, Dad. You owe me. So you come through and you do it on an EVP. I don't care, but you say I was right. He owes me.
You know what? You're really very fortunate in so many ways that you've had so many dad experiences with your dad since he's passed. You've had so much more than most people. I don't really think I've ever seen Larry. I mean, once I talked to him like he's here, I think he's here. And once I really felt him, I've been able to see other people that passed, but that tried to tell me that Larry died. They came into my room where I was and tried to tell me, but there was no words that came out. And then I did see Larry come into the bedroom where I was in a transparent manner and say, look at me and say, I've been calling you. I've been calling for you. How come you're not coming? Don't you hear me? And I went, no. And then he disappeared. But that's the only time I actually saw him. But any other time after that, that was right after he died. That was the minute he died, probably. And I haven't really seen him. And so you really are very fortunate that you've had a chance to have contact with your dad as much as you have.
Yeah,
you know?
I feel lucky. I mean, because it's like the day after he passed, I was in the kitchen, and I had just gotten coffee, and I spilled a little bit. And so I went over in the kitchen to get a paper towel, and I was just coming back, and I looked in the work island. There's a window through it, so I could see into the main dining room here where I'm in. And I saw a motion, and I looked out, and there was a man came walking in, and then he kind of was gliding. It wasn't walking, it was gliding. And I saw that, and I stepped out into the main archway to look out. And it was my father, and he was wearing his dirty white T-shirt. And he had his old pajama bottoms on, and he was gliding. And he glided right up to the main step where you step down into the, there's a little, from the dining room going into the mud room, which is our laundry room area. There's a bunch of cabinets, and it's a little hallway. And he, the minute he went through the doorway, he disappeared. And it was like, holy crap. And it was like, it was one of the best apparitions I've ever seen. And it was like, full living color. I mean, I've seen plenty of apparitions, you know, multiple times. I quit counting. But this one was like the best, and it was my father. You know, I mean, I didn't see his face, but it was a way of letting me know I'm okay. You know, but then all the other stuff has been bonus, you know, and I feel very fortunate. I mean, kudos to Pop, because he's gone to extraordinary lengths to do that. I mean, more so than most spirits would, I think, you know, but
yeah.
he knows what this means. And not only that, I think he knows about, you know, he knew about the show. He knew what I did, you know, and I think he's kind of working off some karma for saying all that stuff, you know. Okay, Pop, you're going to have to pay for that. So, but he still owes me. The sucker still owes me. Yeah,
I was amazed.
He's going to pay.
I was amazed that I even saw your dad. I was totally amazed. I've never met you. I've never met your mom. I never met your dad. I've never even been to Shingle Springs.
Which you need to remedy by coming out. I'm going to invite you out, and you need to come out here. You do.
Okay.
Yep.
But I was amazed at the frequency that I saw your dad for a while there. When he first passed, he was having a blast.
He was flying around.
He was flying, yeah. And he was looking at me. I saw this head, this light, but it was his face in it, and he was zipping around. And he goes, "This is amazing. I can fly. You know, I just get anywhere I want to go. Look at this. If people want to see this, it's great, you know." And then he was telling me, he said, and I think it was meant for you. This remark was meant for you. If he could just see the colors over here, and this is how I'm saying it, how he was saying, if he could just only see the colors over here, they're fantastic. And then zip, 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 you know, and it was like, whoa.
Yeah, that would be like my father. I mean, because my dad was, you know, he was a very, very qualified scientist. I mean, he did a lot of, my father had well over, it was somewhere in the range of 100 to 150 patents. I mean, he invented measuring devices, chemical processes. He revolutionized some designs in the nozzle business, rocket nozzles, rocket nozzle design. Just a total scientist. I mean, he was one of the best at what he did. So for him to get there, he's immediately looking at, you know, I know my father, he would be looking at the physics of it and going, how the hell does this place work? And he's already figured it out, and he's probably made some, and I know my father, he would wheel and deal and do all kinds of crazy things to try stuff. So I know he's blowing the hell out of heaven with explosives. And the other thing is he blew up a lot of buildings. My father vaporized a building. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
Yeah, he did.
A whole building? Were there other people?
An entire building.
Were there people? Were there people in it?
No, there was nobody in it.
Thank God.
He destroyed the building. It went away. The building was gone.
Was he supposed to do that?
No, it was there was a problem.
Oh.
But that's why they had those buildings with blast deflectors and the things that they did. But he made the building go away, and it was a very big problem. But they were working some very dangerous stuff in those days. But that was one of his crowning glories. I always thought it was so cool. My dad vaporized the building. Cool, man. How many other kids could say their dad did that, huh? I did.
Wow.
I know this about Dad. He's having a good time over there, and it's just for him. It's the crowning thing in his world is to be able to go in and do a whole new area of physics and be able to do the things he's doing. So
it's like a big science lab for him, I think.
Yeah,
it's just fantastic, and it's not even a normal science lab. It's way, I don't know how to even say it in words. It's just way.
It's way more than he could even have imagined, and that's how I think he's. I think that's what you're picking up on, is that he just is completely enamored of it and excited and blown away at the same time. And he knows where I'm coming from. I mean, I'm his son, so him saying that would be like him. You'd be going, he's got to see this. You know, I mean,
that's it. He just got to see this. That's what he kept saying.
Yeah,
you know?
He would, and I have an inkling. I mean, I've read enough about the other side. I have some ideas, but I'm sure when I get there, it's going to be like a complete mind tripper. And I'll be saying the same stuff. Holy shit,
that's
amazing. You've got to say this. Yeah, but the first things I'm going to do is I'm going to go over there and haunt a lot of congressmen before I really cross. I'm going to haunt Congress and, make them pay up. They owe me. I'm just going to...
That would be a little too late.
Yeah, I might want to mess with the White House too a little bit, just be a ghost wandering around. I'll hang out with Lincoln, going, hey, dude, show me around.
I think you belong to the science lab with your dad.
Actually, there's one thing I would like to do. I would love to tour the solar system. I think that would be, as a spirit, that would be amazing. Imagine flying to Jupiter or flying out to Saturn. Seeing some of these things, or getting close and orbiting Mercury and then going around the sun and seeing what the sun's about. I mean, it's just a miraculous place. There's some beautiful things out there. It's worth seeing, So to me, it would just be, and to see the Earth itself from low Earth orbit would just be astounding, to see the curvature of the Earth, for the first time. So I just think that they've got it made, man. I think
I saw Earth from a star. I used to go to the star, and it sounds crazy, but when my life was, especially during my adolescent years, when I was probably going through hormone hell myself, I was in conflict with my parents, and I would sit on the star and I'd look at the Earth, and it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And that is, it's just fantastic.
Well, guess what, my dear? Speaking of fantastic, we've had a fantastic 2 hours. We're coming up on 1 minute remaining. So I'm going to thank everybody. We will be on the air. I'm going to look at our schedule and maybe tweak it a little bit to do Saturdays instead of Fridays. So we're going to be on next week, and I'll do some mediumship next week. I will be reading. Don't shoot me if I'm a little rusty. So, but I'm going to be in the hot seat, getting back into the business. So you'll see me again. So thank you, everybody, for dialing in, and just have a great night. And think about what it would be like for you on the other side. And then talk. And not only that, do me a favor. Talk to somebody you've lost. And I'll bet you anything you hear from them in your dreams or whatever. So, Nancy, thank you, dear, for being here. And all of you out there in the audience, thank you for being part of our night tonight. So this is Soul Stream.
No problem.
All right. And we'll be signing off and see you guys on the return on next Friday or Saturday. So take care, everybody. Good night.
Night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
Jesus. Okay.